Last Word on Today FM.
We've invited the various party leaders to interviews here in studio over the next fortnight before general election day. Less than a fortnight now at this stage. Padraig Tobin Avaint, who is with us, we'll hear from him in a moment. We have commitments from the likes of Micheál Martin of Fianna Fáil, who will be here on Wednesday. Various other party leaders, two who were awaiting confirmation from Mary Lou MacDonald of Sinn Féin. We haven't got a confirmation and date yet, but given that she was willing to be involved in our proposed Today FM Sky News television debate, I can't imagine there's any reason why she wouldn't come in here for a one-to-one interview. And Simon Harris is not available for that TV debate. I have been told by one of his closest colleagues in Fine Gael that he will be available to us next week. I sincerely hope so, because since he became leader of Fine Gael and became Taoiseach, he has not appeared on this programme despite multiple requests. And we would expect that, given that The Last Word is doing the Today FM election coverage, and given that it is the second most listened to station in the country, that Simon Harris will be available to come in and answer questions here on the programme. But let's start with Padraig Tobin Avaint. But I sort of wonder, Padraig, should we be giving you this time? I mean, you're the only TD that Avaint has in the Dáil, and you won just 8 council seats in the local elections at the summer.
Well, imagine, Matt, what kind of impact we would have if we had 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 TDs in the Dáil. It is important to say that Aintu polled better than the Labour Party, Soc Dems and People Before Profit in the last European elections, and in many of the polls now we're tipping around 4 or 5%. We're feeling a wave of support coming towards us at the Dáil, at the door, I should say, in the last while, and I believe that we will have a number of TDs joining me on the journey back into the Dáil in the election afterwards.
What's your defining issue, though? Is it immigration? Are you the party that is going the populist approach in response to immigration?
Well, I suppose the defining issue for us is that we're the party that's actually listening to people, and that's a really important issue. So, for example, you know, the referendums just this year, we're the only party that listened to the people in relation to that. We did so on the basis of evidence and facts. We had a moral compass. We made a judgment. We took a side. We made an argument, a coherent argument. And I think, you know, we helped carry a no vote in that election. In terms of migration, for sure, we put that issue front and centre, but on the basis of fact and figures again. So in other words, we didn't use, you know, fear factor. We put in the hard questions to the government around how many people were getting deportation orders, and how many people were actually being deported. And incredibly, it was around 5% was the deportations that were actioned from those deportation orders. We put in the questions about 5,000 people landing in Dublin Airport without travel documents in relation to, you know, for 2 years, Helen McEntee did not know where 80% of the people, how they were getting into the country. And it was our questions in terms of coming across the border from the north of Ireland that actually highlighted that fact. So, you know, what we've done is tried to build an evidence-based argument against the government and their actions in the last while. But, you know, in terms of carbon tax and fuel...
No, let's stick with the immigration for a second. I will get back to carbon tax and fuel. But you, last week, were on this programme as part of an immigration debate, and you were talking about not just limiting those people coming in seeking international protection and looking to deport those who don't qualify. You also were talking about putting a limit on those coming into the country via work permits. Now, you can't put a limit on people coming in from the rest of the European Union because of freedom of movement. But isn't there a big requirement to fill lots of jobs and lots of parts of the economy with these people coming in on work visas? Why shoot ourselves in the foot by stopping them from coming in?
Yeah, so first of all, to say that our policy is based, first of all, that where people are coming in terms of war and violence, that we should do our best to help those. But we do need to really become stricter in differentiating between those who need help in that sector and those who don't. And those who don't need help, we believe, should be removed back to their home countries. In terms of people who are coming in on work permits, for sure, there's massive positive contributions that are made on a daily basis by people working in health and in nursing homes, etc. We need those workers.
And the tech companies that provide all the corporation tax also say they need the engineers and programmers coming in from Asia and other places.
But here's the thing, right? So we know from talking to local authorities that already people who are coming in on work permits are actually presenting to local authorities homeless. So that's an incredible thing that local authorities can't even help them because they're not obviously citizens, they're not in the asylum process, and they are left to their own devices. So we've introduced the idea of sustainability into this whole argument from the start. Manageability and sustainability. And where that sustainability element, actually, the threshold for that is, we can bring in people if we have the resources to be able to accommodate them. So it is wrong to bring in people if you can't accommodate them in the work permit visa. If you're creating more homelessness, if you're creating more of a housing crisis, if there's not enough doctors or teachers or nurses to deal with those individuals. Remember, the government is adding a population roughly of Galway City onto the country on an annual basis, but it's not building a new hospital, a new university, you know, dozens and dozens of schools and the tens of thousands of homes that would be in Galway City. So we need to get to a situation where we control the numbers coming in the work permit space on the basis of sustainability.
Now, you started mentioning carbon issues there in relation to sustainability. Would it be fair to categorise you as having an anti-green agenda?
No, we absolutely believe that there is climate change and we believe that it's man-made and that we want to reduce emissions in relation to this. But we do think that the Greens have been so heavy-handed in relation to this that they've actually made it a divisive issue. Unfortunately, it's actually become a wedge issue in Irish politics at the moment. So the Greens have used the stick rather than using the carrot. So right now, right across the country, there are thousands of people stuck in their cars at the moment. They would give their right hand to be able to get into public transport, but they don't have a public transport alternative. The Green Party last year collected 3.5 billion euros on taxes on fuel, the highest ever in the history of the state, in the jaws of a cost of living crisis. They said in part because they wanted to change people's behaviours to public alternatives. But if there's no public alternative transport, well, then it's just a punitive tax. So what we're saying is bring in the public transport alternative first. And then, you know, then you can talk about, you know, gradually moving the cost of carbon fuels up. So I can tell you right now, I've been working with a number of campaigns just on bus transport, schools. You know, kids who can't get a bus to school, whose parents have no option but to take time off work and drive their kids to schools. You know, 80,000 people will leave my county today to go to work in a car because we've been crying out for a rail line to our county for the last 20 years.
This is County Meath, in case people don't know.
Yeah, in Meath. So, like, Navan is the biggest town in the country without a rail line. The rail line in the west, you know, again, you know, would really enliven that part of the world in terms of infrastructure and development. But we haven't seen that infrastructure delivered. So, and again, just one point, last point in that. So many families want, you know, deep retrofitting of their homes. Farmers would love to be able to micro-generate more electricity. The Green Party, if they meant business in terms of reducing our dependency on fossil fuels, will be focusing on the carrot in those areas rather than beating people into submission with a stick.
You've said previously that you wouldn't go into government after the next election with the Greens or with Fine Gael, but you haven't ruled out Fianna Fáil, have you?
No. The reason why we said, obviously, with the Greens and Fine Gael is because we believe that those parties have done damage to the country over the last number of years. And Fine Gael have been in power for 14 years. It is high time that they spend time on the opposition benches. I'll be honest with you, I think that Fianna Fáil is a hollow ideological husk. And what I mean by that is Fianna Fáil's politics is very transactional now. It's not really directed by a political project of any reality. So in actual fact, it's easier for a smaller party to direct Fianna Fáil in a particular direction than it would be either Fine Gael or the Green Party.
Do you think you could be the tail to wag their dog?
Well, I do believe that we could have a big impact in terms of their directions. You know, and I do think that there's probably a section in Fianna Fáil that are more interested about mercs and perks than they are about actual ideology.
But hasn't Fine Gael come around to an awful lot of your thinking on immigration, for example? All the things that you spelt out are very similar to the way that Fine Gael has been talking in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, again, I think that really harks back to your initial question about the impact that AIM2 has made. And, you know, there's no doubt in my mind that we have had our clothes stolen by the likes of Fine Gael and even Sinn Féin in recent times. You know, like Mary Lou's flip-flop shop has changed direction on a number of different issues in recent times. And Simon has done so also. And all we've actually indicated in our debate is just listen to the people. People have often asked, how do you resolve the crisis on immigration? And we've said, at the basis of that resolution, we need to listen to people. And we will keep pushing that argument in the Dáil, in the next Dáil.
Okay, so that's, you say you would go into power with Fianna Fáil. Could you imagine that even if you had a number of TDs who were necessary for Mary Lou MacDonald to form a government, do you think would she talk to you, given the circumstances in which you abandoned Sinn Féin to set up this new party?
Well, I would say, first of all, when Mary Lou, at the start of the last Dáil, was seeking votes for Taoiseach, representatives of Sinn Féin came to me, sat down and asked, would I be involved in adding my vote to her for Taoiseach. We withheld at that moment in time. You listen, that decision is up to Mary Lou. Our decision of whether we...
No, would you serve as a minister in a Mary Lou MacDonald Sinn Féin-led government?
The one problem I have with Sinn Féin at the moment is I don't know what they believe. And I'm not sure if Sinn Féin...
Jeez, Pat, are you problems with everybody? Who would you be able to do work with?
Well, to be honest, right, what we're saying is that we do want to go into government, that the situation is dire in terms of the cost of living crisis, in terms of regional development, you know, housing and farming. We do want the other parties to get their act together. I'm not sure where Mary Lou stands on a rake of different issues, and I'm not sure if Sinn Féin even knows where they stand on a rake of different issues. They've become fluid and mobile in many areas, unfortunately. And, you know, that's a big disappointment to many people in the country, because many people would have hoped that they would, you know, really have put a challenge to the government in this election campaign. And it's quite clear that because of that, they're at sixes and sevens in terms of where they stand. They haven't been able to do that.
Well, I'll put that to Mary Lou MacDonald when she joins us. One, the reason that you left was opposition to Sinn Féin's position on abortion. So do you regard Aintu as being the main continuing anti-abortion party in this country?
Yeah, I would say that Aintu definitely supports the right to life of everybody within society. There were about 12,000 abortions last year on the island of Ireland. And one of the main reasons for that is economic and social reasons. We want to make sure, first and foremost, that every mother in the country has the economic confidence to be able to raise their child to the full potential. The committee on the 8th found out evidence to say that 85% of abortions happen for economic and social reasons. We know last year that many mothers gave birth homeless in this country. One of the things that we would like to see is a second childcare rate, or a second child benefit rate, which is means tested, which would be focused on the 100,000 children who have the lowest income families in the country. We would like actually that child benefit is given to mothers from the fourth month of pregnancy. So many of the costs of childbirth actually happen in advance of the child's coming into the world. And we would see actually providing that economic support to mothers would help many mothers be able to make a decision, which is positive. I think it's interesting that many of the parties that say they're pro-choice actually implement policies that make mothers feel they have no choice. And that's our primary objective in this area over the next 5 years.
Given your views in relation to issues such as immigration or abortion, if you had a vote in the American presidential election recently, would you have voted for Donald Trump or Kamala Harris?
I would have found it difficult to vote for either. I think, to be honest, Donald...
Oh, come on, you have to make a pick.
No, I don't. It's a democracy. I think Donald Trump is, unfortunately, an ignoramus in many factors. And I think
he shares a lot of your views on issues like immigration and abortion.
I think here's the thing. Like, it's actually interesting in that election. If you really drill down to it, it was the economic issues that actually won it for Trump in reality. And actually, one of the problems with the so-called left in recent times, both in the States and in Europe, is that many of the left used to be an alliance between, let's say, coastal intellectuals, but also the working class and the workers. But a lot of left-wing parties have become, I would say, distracted with the culture wars and have forgotten about the bread and butter issues that actually affects people, have forgotten about even like the cost of living crisis was probably the reason why Trump won in that election. And the fact that the Democrats did not focus on that issue, focused on other issues, lost them that election.
It sounds to me like you'd have voted for Trump over Harris.
No, I would find it very difficult to vote for either in those. I would share views with the Democrats and with the Republicans on different side of issues. But for me, the bread and butter issues are the key elements. And this is the thing that I think that's forgotten in this particular election. There are hundreds of thousands of families at the moment where actually food and fuel is still out of reach for those individuals, where actually poverty is holding them back at a significant level. And like, I just think it's incredibly shocking that we have a government detached from many of those who are struggling, who are, for example, electricity is the dearest here in Europe at the moment. We want to see a reduction in the electricity cost two ways, by the reduction of VAT on electricity, and also that the ESB wouldn't actually be as profitable, that they would reduce the price of electricity for people to make it easier on families.
So how would you define Aintu so to the voter? I mean, are you a left-wing party like the Sinn Féin that you left, or are you a right-wing party given what you say about immigration, abortion, the power of big companies, or are you just simply a populist?
Well, I would say, first of all, those definitions are probably becoming a little bit less less important in the elections at the moment. I would say that most people sitting in their car at the moment would actually be able to say, I support some left-wing issues, and I probably would be of the view that puts me in the right box as well. My view is that those boxes are actually intellectually lazy. You know, the idea we can go into a shop, pick a left-wing box, and then we're told to support everything in that box. We have to actually challenge every single one of those things in an individual basis and then make a common sense idea on it. I would say we're probably gently left of centre in economic terms, but I would say that we're socially common sense in relation to a lot of issues. And that common sense is important.
Also, something else you share with Fine Gael, they keep talking about being the Common Sense Party as well.
Well, I should be charging fees and trademarks for some of the language we've been using that's been robbed by the political establishment in the last while.
We have to leave it there. Pádraig Tobin of Aintu, thank you for being the first of our leader interviews, and we have invitations out with all of the other leaders, some of which have been accepted and confirmed.
The Last Word on Today FM.